We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Light Years. Special guest this week, Warrior Twitter enemy number one, maybe top five, definitely number one if you go back to like 2018 or so, for sure. Host of the ETC's podcast. I don't know, how else do you want to introduce yourself, Eddie Gonzalez? What's up, man?
I think that was am I one? I try to think of who is worse or slash better, so to speak, but I might be one. Like, I was definitely beating the drum.
you were peaking in terms of like visceral hate from Warrior fans, maybe 2017, maybe 2018. It's probably subsided, son, since then. You've fallen down in the power rankings. You might be like 12 or 15 now.
Yeah, like I'm definitely on a Steph run. Like, I'm like still respected, but I'm not on a contender, you know?
Oh, wow. Like, wow, we're going to go there right now?
No, but you know what? I think Cuffs is like a different thing. So it was like,
yeah,
I was definitely up there.
So
fun times, though.
Yeah. So we're in the off season right now. So I feel like might as well rehash that stuff. I'm scrolling Twitter these days. I know you kind of feel similar on this, and you just see people having like Iverson versus Kyrie, like who's better. And it's like, it's August 28th. What are we doing, guys? That sort of thing right there. And it kind of makes me on some level miss like the times 5 years ago, like when there was that like visceral but very authentic hate between like Cavs fans, LeBron's fans, and like Warrior fans back in the day. Cause I feel like social media these days is like all just kind of a knockoff impression of what like organically happened 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe even 7, 8 years ago. You know the time period. I mean,
I feel like back when, you know, me and you or me and Andy or whoever were getting into it, it was understood like it's jokes, you know, like,
right,
we're being funny, we're exaggerating, we're doing stuff that's supposed to be funny. It's not this serious. But I think now they use the word platform. Everybody feels like they have platform, which I think is disrespectful to actual platforms to call your Twitter account. But I think now it's like everybody's trying to be an expert and everybody's trying to be right. You know what I mean? Like when I was arguing with you, it wasn't about being right. It was kind of about being funnier. Everybody wants to be right now. They're having these they're not conversations, they're competitions. So you get these, you know, this player versus that player in the middle of the day on August, whatever. And it's like, yo, they haven't played basketball in 3 months. Like, I'm not really concerned, you know?
And it just feels like there's a lot more people who pop up where it's like, oh, you created this account with like hopes you could grow it to eventually get a job where you get to actually do this, as opposed to, I mean, when you and I were talking shit, really, like I didn't have some like grand plan to grow a platform and like turn anything like that. It was just kind of like, obviously, like, you know, passionate about the Warriors, and obviously like could not get enough of just like arguing back and forth, like substitute for you know, going back and forth with your buddies at a bar or something like that, really.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, I understood Twitter as a tool. So like some of it is conscious in that sense, but I was trying to write about music, you know, and then like, I was just watching basketball and football in my spare time and saying, yo, this is what I think. Right. I wasn't trying to get on TV with Kendrick Perkins or whatever everybody's goal is. I was just talking my shit. And then, you know, LeBron and the Warriors became adversaries in a way that was like unavoidable. And it's like, all right, well, you guys got all these jokes and now I got these jokes too. And this and that. And, but it was never this thing like, yo, I'm building up a podcast through tweets.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
You know?
And, no, those things just like, I feel like the ones that are successful always, it's like it organically happens. It's not like some sort of, you know, pre-rehearsed like corporate plan, you know?
Yeah, because there's definitely, I don't know if it still exists, but I think at a point, and Blue Wire did a great job with this. I think they jumped on it intelligently. It's like, there's a pathway to, okay, enough people like the stuff you're saying about this thing. Why not essentially, you know, put it all in one place and sell it
right
on a podcast. And so there's definitely like this pathway to doing that. And I think it's so crowded now that it's not so much, but 3, 4, 5 years ago, like basically when you got struck at the right time, it was the perfect way to do it. It's like, yo, wait, 10,000 people are showing up every day to see what I think about the Warriors Hornets game last night. Like, hold on, man.
Shout out LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, shout out Melo. But it was definitely, you know, striking while the iron was hot, and there was a pathway. I don't think that exists anymore just because it's so crowded.
I just think you have to be saying something original. It's there's a million people online who do like a Walmart brand version of like Zach Lowe, you know, like, yeah, so, I mean, yeah. He's not an example. It's like, bro, if I want to listen or read Zach Lowe, I'll just go find the man. I don't need your, like, you basically regurgitating what he says. Like, just be yourself. Anyway.
Yeah, nah, 100%. And I don't dwell on this all day either, but that's always the advice I give. Like, people hit me up and say, I want to start a pod. I want to do media. I want to do this. Like, be original. Like, there's already that thing out there. Zach Lowe's the perfect example.
Yeah.
Zach, he's not the first person to GIF plays and then show you who set the back pick on the weak side or whatever, right. Like, you know what I mean? Or to know terminology because he heard it from a coach or whatever right. His thing is. But he did it on the biggest way. And so now that's done. Like, he's done him. And if you do anything like that, it's just a smaller imitation. So why not do something different, you know? And that's what people got to keep in mind. Because it's like, okay, you're breaking down plays and this is dope. But I could just read the Zach Lowe joint
right. And
have learned all this as well. And so that's what I was trying to advise people on is, like, you know, don't be the cheaper version of somebody else, because then you're exactly that. And there's no reason to skip the better version.
Exactly. Yeah. It's anyway, we're aligned on this one. So I want to go back then to back at the time. So I don't know how many people know you're from Northern California, you're from Sacramento, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, enough people though, but yeah, no, yeah. I'm from Northern California, which made it funny because I used to be in the Bay a lot. I'm a Raider fan, right? So right. I used to go to a ton of games at Oracle. I used to be all over the place. This is way before I was like showing my daily life on the internet, but yeah, sure. I used to be out there all the time and definitely like in the thick of it when the Warriors got going.
Well, I feel like, and you're pretty much my age range, so you remember the Sacramento Kings. Like in the early 00s,
yeah,
were legitimate. I feel like every Warrior fan was like a closet Kings fan during that era because the Warriors were garbage. It's like you rooted for the Warriors, but the season was ending April 15th, no matter what. You know, they're going to be nice, nice 20-62. You know, you're lying to yourself that Troy Murphy is going to be the future, some stuff like that.
Yo, what a time.
And then, like, the only thing I think that unites all of Northern California is, like, hatred of L.A. sports teams. So back right. Back in that time, you had the Kings and the Lakers. That was a legitimate rivalry.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, I feel like every Warrior fan I knew, like, when the playoffs started, they're like, all right, just can the Kings beat the Lakers, that sort of thing. And so it's just, I feel like people from Sacramento who are like in that age range and remember that, it's weird because then the Warriors obviously become amazing 6-7 years ago. And meanwhile, the Sacramento Kings are like the punching bag of the entire sport these days.
There's a good argument that that's the worst franchise in sports. There's some bad franchises in sports, but you look at their draft history, you look at the coaching hires and fires, you look at the front office moves.
Been a rough 15 years up there.
It's yo, it's been bad. And it's like stuff like they picked Jimmer a pick before Clay, right? And and there's like
5 before Kawhi. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's like, I think they picked somebody right before Giannis, but they've done that like time and time again. And there's these back-to-back picks. And so Thomas, you could add a superstar and you got
Thomas Robinson, one pick before Dame comes to mind. They could have had Dame and Boogie together. I mean,
the Luka stuff is, I don't think we'll ever get the true story unless Luka comes out and tells it. Right. I don't think he cares. But the Luka stuff is just damning. Like, It's just a hellscape.
I feel like the Luka stuff isn't even a secret now. I mean, it depends if you believe it, but like it's constantly like Vladdy and did not vibe with his family or just did not like him on a personal level was like part of it.
It's
like, that's been like, that's not me like privately. That's been like reported over again. And whether you believe it's a different story.
And then even like the public facing, like we, that's too many ball handlers.
Right.
So like, what
God forbid you have two guys who can create their own shot. Right.
I feel bad for Marvin Bagley because I think he, when he gets in the right spot, he'll actually be a really good pro, but it's like, man, those two guys that came right out of that, it's, what do you do? You know? And even Ayton looked great in the playoffs last season. So it's like, yo, imagine being the whiff in the beginning of that draft. That's sick.
I feel like Ayton, like no one says anything about the Suns just because like Bagley's the only guy in that, the top of that draft who hasn't really popped yet. You know, like he hasn't had a good year or anything, but it's like, I know Phoenix had a nice little run last year and they have a good team and Ayton's objectively really good. They could have Luka and Booker just to build around for the next 7-8 years. Like they can lie to themselves all they want that like it was the right move, but like I don't know, man. you might have like the two best perimeter playmakers under the age of 25. You could have.
I mean, put it like this: if they call Dallas or Atlanta, they're hanging up on them. Like, what? It's a joke, and then they're hanging up. So I mean, It is what it is. I mean, he could develop to be a much better player than he already is. You know, there's no shame in getting exposed by Giannis of all people in the finals. Right. But, you know, you could have Luka Doncic right now. You could have a future like
three. I mean, it's MVP. Better. It's better for the Warriors that Luka and Booker, they didn't build a team around that because that might have some that might have some serious staying power. But
right.
But what I was going to say, let's take it back to when the Warriors got good. So you're a noted LeBron fan, at least back from that era. So was that mostly just because you actually really like his game or you were just trying to rile up Warrior fans because you're from Sacramento?
It's a little bit of both. I'm like a genuinely a fan of LeBron and his game. And, it's funny now, like the game is a little more oversaturated with some of the stuff he does and just kind of, you call it martyr ball, as you call it. But at a time, especially, so I'm 35. So LeBron came into the league. I was still in high school. So it was like, yo,
ahead of you then, huh?
Yeah. It's just like this dynamo, prodigy. And so it was exciting. There's Kobe, there's him, there's all these players. And he did all like the exciting things of the game. And then as his game matured, it was still fascinating to me in that way. But I was definitely a fan of him, but the Warrior fans will fight back. They'll be funny. You know, they could take a joke. When I joke with Laker fans now, when I joke with LeBron fans now, it's like all sensitive and just everything's, it's butthurt for lack of a better term. And it's just like, they're just offended by everything. It's like, yo, I didn't call Sam and Andy every name in the book. Like, come on, bro. Like say something bad. Like, It's just a persecution complex. And it's like, how can you have a persecution complex from the player who's, I'm going to say widely renowned as like the greatest player. Like, there's no persecution. He's everybody's accepted. He's
no one's arguing he's not the best player this era, the most, you know, that sort of thing. And like you said, you could argue like Jordan's better than him, but like that's what we're getting to.
And imagine imagine that that's a diss.
Right.
How dare you say Michael Jordan is better at basketball than this guy? What? That's Michael Jordan though. Like, that's a compliment.
I used to like get annoyed by those. It's like, what do you mean? Like, you think, you know, do you know who Jordan is? And then it dawned on me. It's like, I'm arguing with 22-year-olds. They didn't see him. Like, and then it started getting me thinking, it's like, are you really going to spend your day arguing with college kids about Michael Jordan? Like, go be productive, Sam.
Yo, as somebody who constantly replies, I get it. I get it. I mean, when I try to just be quippy and just be a smart ass, like,
yeah,
I realized a long time ago, I'm not changing nobody's mind.
Right.
And very few people will probably change my mind. So it's like, and then when you take even a smaller step back and you're like, yo, we're just saying all the same things. Like, I know this argument's going. Like I said, if we start arguing about Steph, and it's like, at some point I'll say, well, he won finals MVP. And then you'll go, well, look, it's seven people they pick. It's like, is that accurate? And then, and then we just go on and on. And it's like one of those pick your own adventure books.
Yeah.
Like, I did all the paths. Like, I get it now.
Yeah. And I was going to say, it's just a circle. That's what you said. Then Urkel's going to quote tweet you with the finals record. And then, you know, the debate is complete. That's right.
It's like neither one of us have moved an inch, but we've said all the stuff. We hit all the buttons. So it just got tired in that sense. And then like the sneaky thing is like me and you have been cool for a long time.
Yeah.
So it couldn't be that adversarial. And it's like, all right, like let's move on here.
I just wonder if you can ever recreate a rivalry, like what happened then, because the combo of like the Warriors kind of being like, no one saw that coming.
Yeah.
The way it happened. Then you have like LeBron going home, which is always going to be kind of like the part of his career where he's most popular, because it's just such like a fairy tale type of story. Like, try to win in Cleveland, who can never win.
Yeah.
And then it kind of hits the perfect moment when like social media explodes. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's the part of it which often gets untold. Like, it was kind of the perfect type of rivalry. And then you mix in the fact that, like, it's right around the time where, like, all us dudes who, like, no one would ever know anything about could, like, make a voice for ourselves that, like, with it by like midway through the rivalry, like, I mean, you've seen your tweets on like the jump and stuff like, but like midway through it, it's just like, all right, focus on like Steph and LeBron. Don't focus on like what I said online, you know?
Right. There was this really, so there's two things. It's like this really, you can't script this, but like these kind of philosophical basketball theories at odds, right?
Oh, right.
Like what the Warriors were doing. And then with the Cavs doing like what they represent and all this.
Both on and off the court, by the way.
Yeah. In a million ways, in a million ways, and almost with every single player, you know, like nobody.
Player Draymond empowerment versus like traditional team.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. So Draymond is very, very, very clutch now. I know how you guys talk about him now, but at the time it was like, there was this very fine line in the middle. And then that story of that rivalry had this perfect act one, act two, act three kind of arc to it. And it's like the Warriors become this thing, and it's like they're this like spunky underdog, and they're going to war with the Spurs. And then like, wow, like I remember the Steph game against the Spurs, and he ended up gassing out. Like, you could tell it was just too much.
Where Mono hit the overtime game winner. Yeah.
And it was just like, he ran out of gas, but it was like admirable. Like, you know, like they weren't even supposed to be in round two, you know.
I think that's the last time anyone ever played a drop coverage versus Steph Curry. I remember watching, I saw highlights of it go across my Twitter feed last week, and I'm watching it. It's just like Tim Duncan, you know, like dropping off the screen like Rudy Gobert. Yeah, and I'm just I can't even remember. I don't, I think I can't, I've never seen anyone play Steph like that. You know, like I totally forgot that like before he was Steph, teams were like, yeah, he can't make 10 threes. Like, that's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah. And so, like, there's this arc of that. And at the time, you know, LeBron, the best player ever. And then they slowly turn it. Like, it's like, holy, are they contenders? Holy shit. And then you got Barkley every day reminding us, well, they just shoot too many jumpers that have never won. And then the first final is kind of like the end of the first act because, you know, you have these built-in excuses and it's college running back. But then they actually run it back. And then there's actually a third act where, you know, our guy Kevin shows up and it's just like adds all these elements. You can't really script it like how it went. And those guys will be telling people about that series and that time of their life forever.
Yeah, because it's like you can even look at it now and like what the Nets have going on is interesting. And like they're my pick to win it all if they stay healthy. They probably would have last, you know, it is what it is. They have the most talent. But it just doesn't have the and obviously I'm biased, like I'm in the Bay. It doesn't feel like it's the same level of just like it was a perfect storm. Like half the elements we're mentioning here, you couldn't script if you wanted to. Like you can't script the fact that, like, you know, the Warriors played a very specific style of like team ball movement basketball, which no one else had really done. No one else was doing, and no one else even tries to recreate because it's like so unique to like Steph, Dre, and Clay. Like if the Nets ran that, what would be the point? Like they'd just be worse than playing the way they're supposed to play, right?
right.
Like you want like Harden just like as like, you know, Kyrie and Katie are running off screens. Like what's the point of that, right?
Yeah.
That type of thing. But you have that, and then like you juxtapose it to like LeBron and Kyrie, who are very more like, you know, high pick and roll, like get out of the way. Yeah. I'll, you know, whether it's like Kyrie, you know, cooking someone in like mid-range or LeBron just kind of like dissecting teams with his passing is just so antithetical the way they played. And it made the whole, it felt like you were like, yeah, it's like you said, it's like two philosophical differences. It's like what philosophy you're into. It's like almost like a political fight on some level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that how sports arguments live these days? Like these two guys screaming at each other on just completely opposing sides of the spectrum.
Right.
Like, and you have to pick, you can't be in the middle and see both sides. It's like, you're a fraud, you're an asshole or whatever.
Yeah. Cause like the boring answer is like, yeah, you can win playing both ways depending on who your talent is.
right. And it's like, if you're sitting in the middle going like, yo, this guy's making points too, then you're like scared. You're scared to stand up for it. I'm like, no, I mean, he's presented me all this information. It's actually useful. So, but no, it was a perfect storm in a lot of ways. And I think I always tell people that first quarter of the 17 finals, the first game, it's like, I don't think I ever seen basketball better, more intense. Just that was the peak of basketball to me. It's crazy as sound. Like that was a 5-game series. That half even was just, it was so intense. It was so fast. It was so talented and skilled. That's not happening again unless there's – so, I mean, there'll be another basketball
evolution. Pretty much.
That's not happening for a long time.
Pretty much every one of those players was, like, at their physical peak then, too. That's the other part of it. It's like we – and you take that for granted. Like, the Brooklyn Nets are a perfect example. It's like you take for granted just having everyone get to the matchup without being, like, banged up or on the sideline, too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the other part of it. It's like we can all look on paper and be like, ooh, Nets versus Lakers could be a really fun final because of all these different matchups. Like, how do I know half those players aren't going to be, you know, injured in street clothes by the playoffs?
Last year is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody just had it decided. Like, we're going to get, you know, Kawhi. We're going to get LeBron, AD versus Kevin, Kyrie, and James. And like, we're going to get that. And we're scripting out like the matchups in our head. And where does LeBron go? And who's KCP guard? And who else has to be on the court? And all right, AD can match Kevin. Is Kevin going to then guard AD? Or what are they going to? And they didn't even get close to playing each other.
No.
You know, like they didn't even. And now they're two very different teams, especially the Lakers. They're two very different teams. And
Lakers got the 2012 Eastern Conference All-Stars plus Russ going right
now. And it's like, you know, I remember after the 15 finals, it's like, they got to run it back. They got to, like, it's going to be fire. And then they all get there. Like, they all get there in different states, but they all get there for 16. And that series is so damn dramatic. It's like, another perfect storm. Like, they had all these perfect things going on. And I think what you said too is, it all happening on social media amplified it times 100 and made it better. It was, you know, it was, like I said, 17, that was like the peak of basketball to me. But that run, you know, that's as fun as I remember basketball being since, like, Jordan was winning 73 games. And
yeah,
but that was like a singular force. And he was a rock star, like Michael Jackson. That was different. This is a collection of guys.
It almost, the Jordan thing almost felt like when you're watching like one of those dominant college football teams where you're like, you're watching to see if like can even be beat. Like, you know, they're the best team, but you're wondering if like tonight's going to be the night that like Cinderella went, you know, or whatever, you know, wins.
The peak of Jordan was kind of like the peak of Reggie Bush. Times 100. Like, he is easily the best athlete that's going to get on this field today. And he might just score 100 yard touchdown. I have to see it. I cannot miss him maybe scoring 100 yard touchdown. And that was Jordan. It's like, he might score 80 today. We don't know. Like, he might touch the top of the backboard. We don't know. And you just tuned in for that. It was like the circus aspect almost.
The best part of the Jordan thing was like at the end, he was dealing with like the internal. It's like, oh, Dennis Rodman no one's seen him for 3 days. Like, can Jordan win without that? Like, it's like these random effects. So it's like, but in your mind, you're like, nah, but Jordan doesn't lose. I just can't see how they're going to lose, you know, even though you know all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
I had a friend make a really great point, and I never told him it was a great point because it's mid like LeBron Jordan argument. But it was like, well, Jordan's never won with an underdog team. And it's like, well, Jordan's the reason he never had an underdog team. It's like, shit, that's a good boy. So, I mean, but there was definitely this air of just invincibility with him. And I don't think anybody can recreate that. It was just perfect. But he proved it too. Like, he showed it time and time again. You know, if I'm here and I'm full, we're not going down. And, you know, Jordan's special. Jordan's that guy.
I feel like that also kind of points to like my issue with sports media, where it's like, you can take it to Warriors, Cavs, or you can take it to Jordan, but it's like, we clearly have these like points where all this organic stuff happens and it just peaks at the right time. And like, your mom is texting you about basketball. And like, I guarantee you, my mom knows 3 basketball players total, you know?
Yeah,
but it's like, it's just kind of the NBA has hit this like point that it's got the people who don't care caring. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then it goes the other way and you hit like this period where it's like, I don't really know what's going on with the league. And it's just kind of like only hoops fans are really paying attention. And then sports media is like trying to find a way to chase, to make people who aren't normally interested. And I would say if anything, it has like the opposite effect. Like, you just kind of have to let it be, talk about the game, and then things are going to naturally happen. Like, no one saw, like, the Bucks winning it this year, I thought was really cool. They had a lot of things break their way for it to happen, right? Yeah. But it's like, at the end of the day, you know, Giannis getting 50 in an elimination game, like, that was just like, I don't know, if you told me 3 months before the finals that's what was going to happen, I'd be like, nah. You know, like, they're not getting through all these teams and getting there. And, you know, and I feel like it was even better because, you know, it wasn't scripted. We weren't like talking about it in that capacity.
And you know how it goes, like, time scrubs off a lot of the blemishes. So when they talk about Giannis's title in 10 years, it's going to be like, yo, he beat KD in game 7 on the road.
Right.
KD had 50. And he still beat him. He made the game winner over him. You know, they'll romanticize it in a way, but, you know, it was a great run. At the end of the day, it was a great run. The Hawks series was tough as well. And trust, when that Bucks DVD comes out, or is it even a DVD? I don't know what they even call it now, but when the Bucks championship doc comes out, Kyrie holding his ankle and Trey holding his ankle will not be on the clock. It'll just be just the block against Phoenix. It'll be, you know, dunks and
Chris Paul game. Turning it over will be on the dock though.
It'll be 14 free throws out of 16 or whatever. It'll be a lot of that. But that's what time does to it. And we're so in the moment and so instantaneous. Everybody feels like they have to respond to everything in the moment. In 5 years, it won't read like this at all. We don't talk – like, when we talk about Kobe 2010, we don't talk about – unless you're being an asshole, you're not talking about him missing 18 shots or whatever. You're like, yo, they, like, gritted it out. Like, he got 15 rebounds. He made the clutch free throws. Like, you tell the story way different.
Yeah, you leave the 6-for-24 part out of it.
Yeah. And it's like – but that's what Tom does. So, well, I kind of got there with the Giannis run, too. Like, we just got a Suns-Bucks finals. Like, that's
– yeah.
You know, and we had these collections of stars in these big cities. And whoever Suns-Bucks. That's
whoever,
crazy.
Whoever bet on that game to the finals made some serious money.
I'm happy for, like, guys like Devin Booker.
Right.
You know, Chris Middleton. Guys who are stars, right? But they're not superstars or whatever. However you want to rank the guys. But they're not the faces of the league.
They get over. Like, yeah.
But it's like, yo, we get to see how great they are if we put them on the right stage.
Yeah, I feel like if last year's playoffs didn't show you that, like, maybe you shouldn't judge Zach LaVine for being in a terrible situation or something like, because, like, we love to do that thing, like, well, he's a losing player. It's like, I promise you, you know, like De'Aaron Fox, for example, he's a really good player. He's not superhuman. He can't, like, make Sacramento amazing. And, like, it's just good to have those reminders, like someone with Devin Booker, like everyone's just like, oh, 70 and a loss. Like, did they lose because he scored 70? Like, no. You got to give me a reason why he is the reason that they're losing, because all I'm seeing is a guy who's like a elite scorer who just doesn't have a team around him. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I blame the absolute top flight guys. I blame Kevin. I blame LeBron. I blame guys like that. Because we get to, I don't know how we get accustomed when this is rare, so rare, but we get weirdly accustomed to, like, you hit the league and you immediately make your team better and you immediately are a star and you immediately, like, turn yourselves into a contender and within, by the time you're 21, team, in the finals. That's not how it works.
Cuban had a quote like that where this was back in the day when OKC was a thing and KD and Russ were on OKC. He's like, I don't consider Russ a superstar.
Yeah.
And he was basically it was funny. It's like, cause I remember all Mavs fans are like, why do you continually find ways to hurt our chance of ever signing good players? But he says, like, you're not a superstar unless you can guarantee me 50 wins. Which was, he was making the point, like, as long as I had Dirk on my team and he was in peak condition, I could pencil us in for 50 a season. And if that's, like, your logic, that's pretty much only KD and LeBron over the last decade anyway.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, if you have them on your team, you know, assuming you don't put together, like, the worst roster on earth, you're probably going to at least be, like, a mid-tier playoff team and win about 50 games.
Yeah, that's not the norm at all. And I think Steph's a perfect example. I think James Harden's a perfect example. Right. I think Book and Zach LaVine. It's like, it's insane that Zach LaVine's been on two teams because look how talented he is, right?
Right.
And it takes time, and you have to surround that talent with other talent to make it an actual team that where he can thrive. And you can look at him and see the skill. Like, you can look at him and see that there's something there. And it usually does take time. Like the Zion story. Like, they got to build a contender. Why? He's 20. He's not even contender ready yet. Like, let him build him up.
Or just point out why the team's not winning. That's usually what it comes down to. It's like, well, you know, the Bulls can't defend. Okay, so even if Zach LaVine was Kawhi Leonard, which he's not, you know, but like even if he was, is he protecting the rim? Is he guarding the point? Like, defense, like a team thing, you know, like he's a scorer. He's not, you know, he's not Rudy Gobert anchoring a defense. So, like, I think even, you know, Warrior fans could even point it out, because like the Warriors were 37 and 25 when Steph played last year. Like the 9 games he missed is basically why they fell into the play-in. But right. So what? Even if you extrapolate that out, that's like a middle of the road playoff team. Why? Because there's nothing around him on the roster. It's like Draymond playing defense, and that's about it. And you know, I would use that as a positive column for Steph, where it's just like, man, they gave him a really awful team and he still made them above average and pretty good. But it's like also kind of reminds you that like it takes more than just what we like to talk about basketball players. Like it's tennis or golf or something. It's like, it's Steph versus, you know, Harden. It's like, yeah, well, I bet like James Harden misses having like Chris Paul and all these guys on his team and that sort of stuff, you know? Right.
Well, it's funny. We talked about the philosophical differences earlier with like the Cavs and the Warriors, and the Cavs are, there's this hero ball aspect of what they have. And it's like, well, if we have LeBron, we have a chance. But if LeBron loses, what is the first thing we point out? The things that are around LeBron.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's a team game, but there's a way to parade your guy around as a singular one-on-one game. Basketball's damn near the consummate team game, right?
Right.
Like, there's football and there's more guys. It's almost part of the reason why. But basketball is like, if we're not all working in unison, it won't matter. We're going to look bad. We're going to look crazy if we're all not on the same page. But I blame Jordan. I always blame Jordan. I blame a lot of things. But like, it turned into this singular element. And there's this idea that if KD scores 49 in game 7, KD can get to a level that's high enough in the game that matters, and it won't matter. Whatever happens the rest of the game, they will win the game. But you could lose by 2 inches, you know what I mean? Even at that level. And so I hate that basketball has been written in that way. And it's just this celebration of one player. And that is the one thing I did kind of appreciate about the Warriors, even mid animosity, is like they move the hell out of the ball. And it's all Steve, about everybody thriving together.
Steve Kerr taking the podium and thanking Zaza for his 4 screens as being the key to the W. What's up, Light Years listeners? Andy and I are here to bring you a free giveaway from Pacific Catch. Make sure to tune in and find out our next Spotify Green Room. We will be giving away a $100 gift card to Pacific Catch. Ready for this summer's taste explosion? Come try new Ahi Poke Bombs at Pacific Catch. Featuring sustainable yellowfin tuna in a tofu pocket, they're just some part of the delicious new endless summer menu of bombs, bowls, and bites. And with our fun island-inspired cocktails, there's no better place to enjoy the endless California summer. Go to pacificcatch.com to find your nearest location. Pacific Catch, sustainable seafood, West Coast styles.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top 3 things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, let's talk about the Warriors real quick before we get out of here. So they're now kind of I feel like they're floating. They're not done, but they're also not fully in it, right? Like, one, we don't know what Klay's going to look like. Two, they have a bunch of lottery picks. They're talented. Doesn't mean they're, like, ready to contribute in a playoff setting anytime soon. And I feel like they're just kind of in this weird holding pattern. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not ready to throw in the towel on their like the original core guys, but they're also not ready to go all in on them either. Where are you at with them?
Well, I wonder, and I was very curious to see what Steph was going to do this year. I thought maybe he holds their feet to the fire and says, get us some more. The luxury tax always looms. I think that's the not so secret, dirty secret about the franchise at the moment, and pandemic couldn't help that. But I'm very curious. And if you're Steph, you have to take that contract. It doesn't matter. Like you can get traded out if you feel that upset. I'm very curious to know the private conversations they have, because I'd imagine he's very motivated to continue to compete for titles, and Draymond as well. Draymond's pretty vocal about it. And I'd imagine Clay is on
Draymond the show. Just does the dirty work for Steph publicly. It's like good cop, bad cop. Like Steph says like the right things in the media, then Draymond just comes out there and says, but this is what he's really thinking.
Enforcer in every element for Steph and no matter what, you know, every place on the court, off the court. But so part of me goes, are they planning a season? I don't know. You know, they added some pieces. They do look to be talented. I don't even know if last year I thought last year they took a real shot, especially when they lost Clay, and it's like, okay, let's go get some pieces. Let's add some stuff. They didn't all work. You know,
no, they did not.
Of complaints about Kelly Oubre, a lot of complaints about a lot of little pieces they picked up. They didn't all work. But
shout out Brad Wanamaker.
Had Oubre been what you needed him to be, had he been healthy, had Steph remained healthy, is there a universe where they get through the West last year? Why not? Why couldn't they beat Utah? Why couldn't they beat Phoenix? You know, them and Phoenix goes to the finals, but we joke about 2015, the Warriors, the point guard got hurt every step of the way or whatever the joke is. Phoenix saw injuries break their way every series. All three series and things worked out their way. It's like,
I mean, I feel more.
There's a universe where things break better for the Warriors, and they're seen as better contenders. Maybe they're in the conference finals. So I struggle to say that they're punting. I think they're just sorting out, you know, how do we make this work with the limited resources we have, because we have a $200 million contract. We have another like $180 million contract. Like, we have these massive contracts. And we have to pay them. Like, we cannot let Klay Thompson go play for another team. He's Klay. Right. He did all this shit. And they absolutely can't let Steph walk out the door. So, you know, we got to figure this out. I think, you know, they feel like they're always in talks with, like, these big trades.
Yeah.
And if they really take
they're really taking the mantle of being like the new age Lakers. Like, they're just, no matter who's on the market, there's a Photoshop and a rumor ready to go.
But the reason why is because if they add Brad Beal or they add Ben Simmons or whoever the rumor is, right, they add one more infusion of talent to that roster. They're contenders. Everybody knows that they're dangerous as long as they have Steph, and he has enough help for them to be that. And that's why they're always going to be in those rumors, because it's like, yo, if they get one more guy, like, you're telling me they can't beat the Lakers? And everybody knows that, whether they want to admit it or not, everybody knows that they're dangerous.
Would you, let's play some fantasy trade talk then. Would you rather, you're Bob Myers, you have the opportunity to trade some of your young pieces and future picks. Would you rather get Bradley Beal or Ben Simmons with this group?
Is Draymond there?
Yeah.
Like, having Draymond and Ben on the same team.
It's Wiggins and like Wiggins to make the contracts work, and just a boatload of like picks and young players, right? Like how trades are normally constructed.
I would say Brad, like, you get that amount of shooting on that roster. You get Klay back to whatever Klay is. And I think,
and
you know,
that would make it easier on Klay, by the way, because he wouldn't have to be the number two.
You know, what's funny about Brad is he's seen as a decent defensive hole these days. And a lot of guys have seen like defensive holes on bad teams. Those early John Wall runs, it was like they were strapping up. They were really getting after it on the perimeter. And he was seen as a whole different guy. You know, I still don't know that, like, that's an incredible defensive team, Steph, Brad, you know. But that's such
You're asking Draymond to be helping a lot of different places.
Yeah. That's such an explosive offensive team, though. And with Dre there to help orchestrate that, I think that's.
See,
you can't say no to that. You know, you have to, and I'd imagine the Warriors tried, but it seems like you know, Brad has any sense and he's waiting on. I'm
positive they have tried, and because it hasn't happened, that's where the denials come. Yeah, you know how you know how it's played. You're seeing if it's a possibility. Then if it isn't, you're automatically lying and being like, I would never trade this guy. I love him. You know, that type of thing.
And on top of that, I'm 100% trade the potential for the known commodity on all levels, every facet.
Yeah, unless you're like the Houston Rockets right now, though. Like if you're like Houston, you're like, we're, you know, all right, let's see what we have with like these young guys, because we're building for like 3 years down the road. That's like the only time you don't do it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember the Ben Simmons Kawhi stuff, and this is when he's with the Spurs, and I'm like, there's like a 10% chance Ben ever gets to be as good as Kawhi is right now. Go get Kawhi. What are you talking about? Right. And you know, I got ridiculed and all that, but now look, like the Sixers would murder a puppy for Kawhi. Like, you know what I mean? And
they might have won a title if they pulled that off.
They might have won a title that year. And that's why I always respect what Toronto did. And it's crazy, like that trade in retrospect looks worse and worse by the day for the Spurs. But it's like, you have to take the shot while the shot's there, because you're not, the window will close on you quick. So if I'm the Warriors, I mean, again, I'd imagine.
And here's the reality of it too. I think Kuminga is going to be a really good player. I think James Wiseman's going to be a really good player. The odds that they mean that they're as good and mean as much to your franchise as Steph Curry are like one in a bazillion.
Yeah.
So if you have a chance to go all in and make one more run at it and maybe get one more ring before these guys inevitably, you know, kind of age off into the sunset, like you got to go for it.
Yeah. And the thing is too, with a guy like Wiseman, with a guy like Kuminga, it's like even a guy like, what's the guy off the bench, the guard? I forget. But Poole. Yeah, the Michigan guy, Poole. Even if they're not going to meet their max potential next to those guys and in that system. Not because those guys don't make players better, but because, like, I used to say the same thing with Kevin Love. Everybody says, well, you got to run the offense through Kevin Love at the elbow. No, you don't, because you have LeBron and you run through him at the elbow. And so it's like, yo, we would love to, like, facilitate Jordan Poole's growth, but we have the leading scorer in basketball and the greatest shooter of all time.
Who's just better at him at everything he does. Yeah.
So like, we're going to run it all through him. And we would love to have James Wiseman like do the shit he's best at, but you know, what's best for us in winning?
Yeah.
Him making sure Steph is open and Steph utilizing that. So it's like, you know, in this weird way, those guys might be in a better place on another team, even though this team is great and they have a system that works. We complain about system. We've seen the system work.
Yeah.
But on top of that, like, you have to maximize these other players. It's more valuable for you. And it's just is what it is.
So I want to get back to the Beal thing, then get out of here. I actually feel the opposite as you. I feel like the Warriors, if you can get either of them, just get them, you know?
Yeah.
Like the odds that they're both teams are like begging you to take their best players, like very, very little. But like, I think they'd be better off getting Ben Simmons. And my logic is everything's running through Brooklyn and the Lakers.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to beat Brooklyn offense for offense. Like, it's Brad Beal, Steph, and Clay can definitely like trade blows with KD, Harden, and Kyrie. And like, they can definitely beat them, but like, no one's going to beat Brooklyn at their own game, is basically what I'm saying
here.
Yeah. Build a team that can legitimately defend as a unit, you'd be having probably, well, they finished second and third in defensive player of the year, Ben Simmons and Draymond. And for my money, they're both better than Gobert defensively anyway.
Oh yeah.
You kind of almost have to do what like Milwaukee did, where it's like, we're not going to beat Brooklyn trying to go one-on-one. Like, Drew Holiday is not going to win a back and forth mano-a-mano matchup with Kyrie. Like, you know, what I'm saying? But what you can beat them at is like defending as a unit, making their life difficult and trusting your offense. And then, you know, at the end of the day, if Steph and Clay don't hit enough shots, then they didn't hit enough shots. But it's like, that's makes more sense to me, because at least you're given a kind of a clash of the styles. I worry too much about like trying to match their offensive firepower, because like, over a best of seven, I just don't see how you're going to, you know, if you can't slow them down, they're going to probably make more shots than you, period.
No, and I get it 100%. And I think the philosophy is right. You know, you're not going to one-on-one dribble drive, dribble pull up. You're not going to outdo Kyrie and James and Kevin doing that. I think, and I agree that, like, if you have Steph and Clay, you always have a semblance of spacing in right. some sort. I think the 19 finals, perfect example. It's like, as long as they were both there,
I'm pretty sure at one point they ran a lineup of like Boogie, Looney, and Draymond at the same time, which like, that's really stretching the boundaries of how much spacing you get out of two guys.
You have two guys who have to chase the half court no matter where they're standing.
Yeah.
And so they'll always have some semblance. So I get it. For me, it's just I just do not like Ben Simmons. I just do not like what he does for you on the court. He's an incredible defender, I agree. But that didn't stop Trae Young from getting to his stuff, you know. And it's so much, and you know how that playoff offense is, it's so much like, look, you do have a great defender. I'm just gonna screen him until he's not guarding me, and then I'm gonna go. I'm not gonna do shit until I have.
We'll get Steve Kerr to tell Benson stories about Michael Jordan, and that'll fix everything.
That'll work. I think you know. Sources tell me them those speeches really pushed guys to the title. I heard once upon a time. But no, I mean, I'm excited.
I'm with you on the. That's the other part of it. It's like, you can get so blinded with someone like Ben Simmons that you like ignore the obvious stuff that comes up every year in the playoffs because you want to believe next year will be the year he like gets over that hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy as it sounds. I'm excited to see what the Warriors do. I think, you know, Steph makes them fun no matter what. There's always this element of just explosion at any point. And then I think he's figuring, as crazy as it sounds, I think he's figuring out his game even more. You know, as he gets older, it's like he's finding out when to drive. He's realizing when to hit just a mid-range pull-up. And then he'll always have confidence in his shooting. And he's just such a fascinating player in a basketball sense to watch on the court. It's like, you know, he made those play-in games fun. And they shouldn't have been as fun as they were. And unfortunately for you guys, they come out on the wrong end of it. But it just added an element of just anything can happen because Steph is out here. Like, they could just beat the Lakers. Like, they might just, and they almost did. And then, you know, it's very rare that you
watch. Lucky shot.
It's no comment. It's very rare that you watch guys. Like, I remember in high school, we all went to high school with the guy who was like the best guy. And just the way he got guarded and just see that happen. And it happens to a couple guys, not just Steph. I think. You know, we get a little overboard saying it's just Steph because we've watched Dame get chased all over the court. We've watched other guys. Not that they're better or worse or whoever, but it happens when guys are that on fire. But I feel like it almost happens more frequently to Steph than anybody else. See, whatever we do, we cannot let him catch it. And if he catches it, we cannot let him throw it at the rim. Like, somebody else has to shoot. And you watch the Grizzlies do that in overtime of that playing game. It's like, it was just so fun. Like, all right, we got to see what he can figure out how to do. And he's running, giving goes. He's, you know, Draymond's walking the ball up. He's going to get it from him at half court and all this shit. And it's like, it's just a different type of basketball. And you don't see that with everybody. So the Warriors will always fascinate me as long as he's there. And I'll be tuned in. I know when I was on locker room with you guys, your fans hated that, but it's true. I'll be tuned in. I enjoy the hell out of this team and especially Steph.
Yeah. Let's end it there. We got a season coming up. I think they're going to be fascinating one way or another. Hopefully they make another move.
Yeah, man. Eddie,
appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you for having me, man. And, you know, tell all your guys, tune in to me and Kevin. We'll, you know, hopefully we'll be talking to stuff. Hopefully we'll be talking. We've tried. And I think it's possible, and it's just timing and all that stuff. So hopefully y'all get that episode. And hopefully you guys are enjoying the pod, and we have some big stuff in the works for this year.
Appreciate you
having me, man.
Let's see if you can get Steph to throw Bob and Steve under the bus like Draymond.
Woo! What a fun time that would be. You know, I will say this. I'll leave on this note. It's like, as I got to know Kevin and, you know, I'm asking all the gossipy shit, you know, I just got to know, right? I just got to be that guy. Tell me about Steph. Like, you know, what's he like? Is it all an act? Is he like drinking and kicking it and doing all this? He's like, Steph is exactly what you see. Like, he's just great guy, like great husband, great family man. Like, he's great. And so whenever there's this idea that Steph and Kevin don't get along or whatever, it amuses me because it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, a lot, ton of respect, ton of, not even just as a hooper, just as a guy. And mm-hmm. so that tripped me out to learn that. I was like, oh, that's dope. I mean, it's actually what I expected, but to hear, like, you know, again, this is like super off the record conversation. There's no reason to lie. To hear that Steph is like this great guy, I was like, oh, that's dope. It's dope to see it. It makes me even like a little more happier for all his success and what he's doing.
And I think that's the one thing I've also really enjoyed about the KD Draymond, like, first your podcast on the ETCs and then like the one they did for on Draymond show. It's just like, there doesn't need to be that animosity. And like, was Draymond the reason that, you know, KD left, or was Andy Lou the reason that KD left? It's like, yeah. So it's just like, you know, I think people, you know, realize over time, it's like, things sometimes run their course and people go in different directions, and it doesn't have to be like a violent inflection point. Like, you know, kind of like all that stuff goes back to like childhood and like the Shaq Kobe drama. Like, assume like if any team breaks up, oh, well, it's got to be like a new Shaq Kobe thing. Right. And it's like, and even that one, like, I feel like they just say like the only reason they broke up was because like, they didn't want to pay Shaq anymore.
It's funny because we've all left jobs. We've all had friends we not even fell off with, just grew apart from. We've all had work friends and kind of we don't see as much. And it's just impossible for that like to happen on the NBA level. We expect them to be brothers forever and all this stuff.
Yeah, because you're comparing their job to like your high school team, where like boys are. It's like you can't comprehend the idea that like, you know, playing for the Warriors is like a job for them the same way you like clocking in is, you know?
And then it's funny. And then you get around them and incredibly grounded view of everything. And then you go, oh, I get it. Everybody's cool. I get it. It's fine. So yeah, I mean, again, thanks for having me. Tune into the et cetera's. I'll leave on this note. I know we're like ending and we've been ending for 5 minutes. everything is Sam's fault. Everything is me meeting Kevin, me, you know, kind of drumming up business, because Sam was very instrumental in getting me going with podcasting. So he'll always be my guy. And, you know, Kevin found us on a Blue Wire pod. So
the Andy Lou shirts were just a cover for me. Yes. The dynasty.
See, I hate to ruin our public facade, but nah, man, always, always my guy. Both of you guys, appreciate you having this long time coming. We'll have to do this again when the Warriors for the
You got Nets. We'll do something in season when we actually have hoops to talk about.
I think I'm gonna come to the Bay, man. I think I'm coming to the Bay when they play out there. We'll have to link. We'll have to do something.
Sounds good, man.